Side 4.
What is needed is a new drug which will relieve and console our suffering species without doing more harm in the long run than it does good in the short. Such a drug must be potent in minute doses and synthesizable. If it does not possess these qualities, its production, like that of wine, beer, spirits, and tobacco, will interfere with the raising of indispensable food and fibers. It must be less toxic than opium or cocaine, less likely to produce undesirable social consequences than alcohol or the barbiturates, less inimical to heart and lungs than the tars and nicotine of cigarettes. And on the positive side, it should produce changes in consciousness more interesting, more intrinsically valuable than mere sedation or dreaminess, delusions of omnipotence, or release from inhibition. To most people, mescaline is almost completely innocuous. Unlike alcohol, it does not drive the taker into the kind of uninhibited action which results in brawls, crimes of violence, and traffic accidents. A man under the influence of mescaline quietly minds his own business. Moreover, the business he minds is an experience of the most enlightening kind, which does not have to be paid for, and this is surely important, by a compensatory hangover. Of the long-range consequences of regular mescaline taking, we know very little. The Indians who consume peyote buttons do not seem to be physically or morally degraded by the habit. However, the available evidence is still scarce and sketchy. In his monograph, Menomonee Peyotism, published December 1952 in the Transactions of the American Philosophical Society, Professor J. S. Slotkin has written that the habitual use of peyote does not seem to produce any increased tolerance or dependence. I know many people who have been peyotists for 40 to 50 years. The amount of peyote they use depends upon the solemnity of the occasion. In general, they do not take any more peyote now than they did years ago. Also, there is sometimes an interval of a month or more between rites, and they go without peyote during this period without feeling any craving for it. Personally, even after a series of rites occurring on 4 successive weekends, I neither increased the amount of peyote consumed nor felt any continued need for it. It is evident with good reason that peyote has never been legally declared a narcotic or its use prohibited by the federal government. However, during the long history of Indian white contact, white officials have usually tried to suppress the use of peyote because it has been conceived to violate their own mores. But these attempts have always failed. In a footnote, Dr. Slotkin adds that it is amazing to hear the fantastic stories about the effects of peyote and the nature of the ritual, which are told by the white and Catholic Indian officials in the Menomonee Reservation. None of them have had the slightest first-hand experience with the plant or with the religion, yet some fancy themselves to be authorities and write official reports on the subject. Although obviously superior to cocaine, opium, alcohol, and tobacco, mescaline is not yet the ideal drug. Along with the happily transfigured majority of mescaline takers, there is a minority that finds in the drug only hell or purgatory. Moreover, for a drug that is to be used like alcohol for general consumption, its effects last for an inconveniently long time. But chemistry and physiology are capable nowadays of practically anything. If the psychologists and sociologists will define the ideal, the neurologists and pharmacologists can be relied upon to discover the means whereby that ideal can be realized, or at least for perhaps this kind of ideal can never in the very nature of things be fully realized, more nearly approached than in the wine-bibbing past, the whiskey-drinking, marijuana-smoking, and barbiturate-swallowing present. The urge to transcend self-conscious selfhood is, as I have said, a principal appetite of the soul. When, for whatever reason, men and women fail to transcend themselves by means of worship, good works, and spiritual exercises, they are apt to resort to religion's chemical surrogates, alcohol and goof pills in the modern West, alcohol and opium in the East, hashish in the Mohammedan world, alcohol and marijuana in Central America, alcohol and coca in the Andes, alcohol and the barbiturates in the more up-to-date regions of South America. In Poison Sacré, Ivresse Divine, Philippe de Félice has written at length and with a wealth of documentation on the immemorial connection between religion and the taking of drugs. Here, in summary, or in direct quotation, are his conclusions. The employment for religious purposes of toxic substances is, quote, extraordinarily widespread. The practices studied in this volume can be observed in every region of the earth, among primitives no less than among those who have reached a high pitch of civilization. We are therefore dealing not with exceptional facts which might justifiably be overlooked, but with a general and, in the widest sense of the word, a human phenomenon, the kind of phenomenon which cannot be disregarded by anyone who is trying to discover what religion is and what are the deep needs which it must satisfy. End of quote. Ideally, everyone should be able to find self-transcendence in some form of pure or applied religion. In practice, it seems very unlikely that this hoped-for consummation will ever be realized. There are, and doubtless there always will be, good churchmen and good churchwomen, for whom, unfortunately, piety is not enough. The late G.K. Chesterton, who wrote at least as lyrically of drink as of devotion, may serve as their eloquent spokesman. The modern churches, with some exceptions among the Protestant denominations, tolerate alcohol, but even the most tolerant have made no attempt to convert the drug to Christianity or to sacramentalize its use. The pious drinker is forced to take his religion in one compartment, his religion surrogate in another. And perhaps this is inevitable. Drinking cannot be sacramentalized except in religions which set no store on decorum. The worship of Dionysus or the Celtic god of beer was a loud and disorderly affair. The rites of Christianity are incompatible with even religious drunkenness. This does no harm to the distillers, but is very bad for Christianity. Countless persons desire self-transcendence and would be glad to find it in church. But alas, the hungry sheep look up and are not fed. They take part in rites, they listen to sermons, they repeat prayers, but their thirst remains unassuaged. Disappointed, they turn to the bottle. For a time at least, and in a kind of way, it works. Church may still be attended, but it is no more than the musical bank of Butler's Air One. God may still be acknowledged, but he is God only on the verbal level, only in a strictly Pickwickian sense. The effective object of worship is the bottle, and the sole religious experience is that state of uninhibited and belligerent euphoria which follows the ingestion of the third cocktail. We see then that Christianity and alcohol do not and cannot mix. Christianity and mescaline seem to be much more compatible. This has been demonstrated by many tribes of Indians from Texas to as far north as Wisconsin. Among these tribes are to be found groups affiliated with the Native American Church, a sect whose principal rite is a kind of early Christian agape, or love feast, where slices of peyote take the place of the sacramental bread and wine. These Native Americans regard the cactus as God's special gift to the Indians and equate its effects with the workings of the divine spirit. Professor J. S. Slotkin, one of the very few white men ever to have participated in the rites of a peyotist congregation, says of his fellow worshippers that they are, quote, certainly not stupefied or drunk. They never get out of rhythm or fumble their words as a drunken or stupefied man would do. They are all quiet, courteous, and considerate of one another. I have never been in any white man's house of worship where there is either so much religious feeling or decorum. End of quote. And what, we may ask, are these devout and well-behaved peyotists experiencing? Not the mild sense of virtue which sustains the average Sunday churchgoer through 90 minutes of boredom, not even those high feelings inspired by thoughts of the Creator and the Redeemer, the Judge and the Comforter, which animate the pious. For these Native Americans, religious experience is something more direct and illuminating, more spontaneous, less the homemade product of the superficial, self-conscious mind. Sometimes, according to the reports collected by Dr. Slotkin, they see visions which may be of Christ himself. Sometimes they hear the voice of the Great Spirit. Sometimes they become aware of the presence of God and of those personal shortcomings which must be corrected if they are to do His will. The practical consequences of these chemical openings of doors into the other world seem to be wholly good. Dr. Slotkin reports that habitual peyotists are on the whole more industrious, more temperate, many of them abstain altogether from alcohol, more peaceable than non-peyotists. A tree with such satisfactory fruits cannot be condemned out of hand as evil. In sacramentalizing the use of peyote, the Indians of the Native American Church have done something which is at once psychologically sound and historically respectable. In the early centuries of Christianity, many pagan rites and festivals were baptized, so to say, and made to serve the purposes of the church. These jollifications were not particularly edifying, but they assuaged a certain psychological hunger, and instead of trying to suppress them, the earlier missionaries had the sense to accept them for what they were, soul-satisfying expressions of fundamental urges, and to incorporate them into the fabric of the new religion. What the Native Americans have done is essentially similar. They have taken a pagan custom, a custom incidentally far more elevating and enlightening than most of the rather brutish carousals and mummeries adopted from European paganism, and given it a Christian significance. Though but recently introduced into the northern United States, peyote eating and the religion based upon it have become important symbols of the red man's right to spiritual independence. Some Indians have reacted to white supremacy by becoming Americanized, others by retreating into traditional Indianism. But some have tried to make the best of both worlds, indeed of all the worlds, the best of Indianism, the best of Christianity, and the best of those other worlds of transcendental experience where the soul knows itself as unconditioned and of like nature with the divine. Hence the Native American Church. In it, two great appetites of the soul, the urge to independence and self-determination, and the urge to self-transcendence.